I would like to thank my daughter, Rebecca, for introducing me to a book and also literally introducing me to the author of the book. My daughter is a freshman at UNC Charlotte, and there was a book that was required reading for her course in Global Connections. The book is called The Blue Sweater. I don't know if any of you have heard of it. It's on the New York Times bestseller list. It's written by Jacqueline Novogratz. It's a story that she tells about her life, and I'd like to tell you the story of the blue sweater as a starting point. I almost feel inappropriate for me to tell her story because she tells it from her own experience and from her own heart. But here's the story of the blue sweater. When Jacqueline was about 10 years old, an uncle of hers gave her a sweater as a gift, a blue sweater. And on the sweater, there was a scene of zebras running across a field, mountains in the background. It's a sweater that Jacqueline fell in love with, and she wore it every time she could. Years later, she was in high school, still wearing this blue sweater that she loved. But she tells the story that as she began to grow older and develop as a young woman, the sweater began to take on some different shape and form. And some of the students in her high school class, one of the students began to tease her about her sweater and the mountains on the sweater. And she felt kind of humiliated by that experience. Went home and told her mom about it. And her mother respectfully heard what she said and said, well, what do you want to do? She said, I don't want to wear this sweater anymore. Let's give it away. So they ceremoniously folded up the sweater and gave it to Goodwill. Jacqueline tells a story that years later, about 10 or 12 years later, she was having graduated from college. She was a Wall Street banker and was doing work in Africa, in Uganda. And she tells a story of walking down this street, this roadway, and as she's walking, she sees this young boy walking towards her. She describes him as a straggly little boy. And she looks, and he's wearing the blue sweater. She calls the little boy over and says, "Could I see you?" And comes over, and she takes the tag on the sweater and looks underneath, and sure enough, it says, Jacqueline Novogratz. It was her sweater, thousands of miles away. And she shares that this experience was a transformative experience in her life because it spoke to her of how small the world really is and how interwoven we are and how the actions of one of us can have such a play in the actions in the world of others. And this really transformed her life. She left Wall Street banking, but stayed in banking and is now involved in working with microfinancing, microbanks in Africa and India and other areas of our world. She was at UNC Charlotte the other night to speak, and Rebecca told me about this on Tuesday, and I made it a point to get there, to hear her speak. And I had a chance to meet her as well. Rebecca introduced me to her. And I had a chance to spend some time. And I think the people behind us online waiting to meet people were kind of anxious because I kept talking to her about the work she does. She has founded the Acumen Fund, which is a fund, a microfinancing organization that puts funds into people's lives and transforms lives. She told the story of in one village of Africa where there was a group of women who were described as just prostitutes. They were basically single moms who couldn't get by, and they would sell little baked goods on the side to help their income. And she met with these women and was able to encourage them to give up one form of life and to become a bakery and to open a bakery. And they began to become successful in what they were doing and making a living in a place where the average income is $1 a day. $1 a day. And she tells stories of having funds that are put into people's lives and to listening to people and see ways of changing people's lives. She talks about patient capital. Patient capital. Giving money to people who would never qualify for a bank loan, but giving people capital and being patient with how it can play out. One of the things she shared was, in our own world today, how the world is getting smaller and smaller. We're getting closer and closer, saying to the students that she was talking to how the world that they know is so different from the world most of us know. They can sit at a desk and be in touch with a larger world. And was saying that, interestingly, as the world is getting smaller, as we're becoming aware of our inter wovenness, if that's even a word, of our being close together, isn't it interesting that we are also pushing each other away? We're pushing each other away. We're living in a world where we're coming closer, but somewhat resisting that. We're doing it politically. We're doing it culturally. We're doing it theologically. We're doing it in faith traditions. As we get closer, putting up these barriers. How can we change that? How can we transform that? That was the challenge and the invitation that Jacqueline offered to the students gathered at Charlotte the other night, and it's an invitation she offers in many, many venues and many places. As I was preparing for my thoughts this day, I was reading our gospel reading today, and this everything began to weave together for me this past week. This gospel reading that we've just heard is a story of the Pharisee and the tax collector coming to the temple, and the Pharisee being very taken with himself and coming before God. Thank God I'm not like these people. It's kind of what he's saying. And the tax collector, of course, in all humility in the back, described as, you know, "O Lord, have mercy on me, a sinner." What's the context of that reading? It's important to know what temple worship was like at the time of Jesus in the Jewish tradition. And as I've always said, whenever I'm talking about the Jewish tradition, remember that the Jewish tradition is a prototype for all religion. We're not just talking about Judaism. We're talking about religion in general and even our own traditions as well. Within the Jewish tradition, in the temple, there were certain people that were not allowed in the temple for worship. I wrote them down so make sure I don't forget. Certain people who were not welcomed within the community. And they were, some of them are the following. People with skin diseases. The book of Leviticus spells this out. The book of Leviticus. People with skin diseases, oftentimes referred to as lepers. Anyone who had a skin disease was kind of pushed apart, not really welcomed into the community. Those who had physical challenges, physical disabilities, those who could not see, those who could not hear, those who could not get around like everybody else, were not welcomed at the temple. Gentiles, the non-Jews, were not allowed in the temple. You know, there seems to be a part of our humanity that never welcomes the non-us. Whoever we are, we always seem to put a barrier up to those who are not us. And that was true of the temple experience as well. Jewish women were not welcomed in the temple at certain times of the month. Any occupation that made someone unclean or impure, people that worked with blood, people that worked with animals, shepherds were not welcomed in the temple. Tax collectors were not welcomed in the temple. Leather workers were not allowed in the temple. It's also another interesting category. Wasn't sure I'd even mention this one. Also not welcomed in the temple were the illegitimate sons and daughters of the priests. Interesting categories. If you were to make a list of the people in Jesus' ministry who responded to him and whose lives he touched, you would find it's all those people. The people of power, the people within the temple, had a difficult time responding to the ministry of Jesus. Because Jesus was challenging a structure as well as their individual lives, of seeing things in a new way, opening themselves up to new ways of seeing things. And yet it was all these people that are on the stay out of the temple list that Jesus spent time with and who responded to his ministry. Now, don't get me wrong. There's nothing wrong with the people who are in the temple. They were trying to live a faith-filled life. They were trying to follow their traditions, their customs. But sometimes those traditions and customs can block out some parts of what we're called to as a people of faith. And Jesus was always kind of challenging that in his life, in his ministry. And so I'm driving back from Charlotte the other day. I can do it in 2 hours now, door to door. I'm driving back and putting together this gospel reading and this experience I had with Jacqueline Novogratz, having had a chance to spend some time speaking with her and having, you know, been exposed to some of the ideas she has. And all of a sudden, it struck me here at St. Paul's, the youth are leading us. The youth are leading us. Here's what I mean. Our youth have become involved in what's called Kiva, kiva.org. What Kiva is an incredible website you can go to, and you can make your own personal contribution through a microbank, through microfinancing, to make an impact in the world. Whereas Jacqueline Novogratz has started Acumen, and we give millions and millions of dollars. And my conversation with her is, you know, the church in general gives millions of dollars away. What an incredible thing it would be to somehow funnel some of those resources to make a difference. She asked me to get in touch with her. She wanted to invite me to be on their board.
I got enough on my plate right now.
But we're talking about this way of how can we energize church giving to make a difference. But when I came back to St. Paul's, I realized that that's what Kiva is. And our youth have discovered this. This afternoon at the pumpkin carving, there's going to be a Kiva carnival. What Kiva is this. You can go to kiva.org. You can sign up and do all you have to do. And on that website, there are lists of people in countries throughout the world who are trying to make a difference in their lives. There's an example of someone who lived in an African village who lived on a dollar a day, lived in a tin hut with sewage going through their area, just an incredibly poor and poverty-stricken life. And as Jacqueline Novogratz says, charity is not going to end poverty. It's going to help people, and we need to have charity. We need to have it to support people in times of crisis, but it's not going to eliminate poverty. What's going to eliminate poverty is empowering people and listening to people in their lives. And there's a woman who, for instance, this is a simple example. She lived in a village, had a resource of peanuts, and wanted to make peanut butter and sell it in the village. But she needed a peanut butter maker machine, which is going to cost $400 to buy. Tough to buy when you make a dollar a day. Take your annual income and think of buying something you would need to be successful. Through Kiva, you can click in and say, I'm going to give $25 to that person. And you can, the microfinancing connects to that person. And you can track that person's success, because eventually the commitment is that those people will pay back those loans. When they've made some money, they pay back those loans. And you're notified of that. And you can then take that $25 and put it in another place. It's like recycling your investment and improving people's lives, getting people to a new place in their life. Kiva.org. Our youth discovered this. Invite us as a parish to consider it. And that's going to be part of our celebration this afternoon, their Kiva Carnival. Another example of making a difference in people's lives. So I invite us as a people of faith to find ways to not push each other away, but find ways that we can engage with people and hear each other. I'll end with this thought. Jacqueline Novogratz was asked by one of the students the other night, what should I study to be able to do this kind of work? And she said, study wherever your passion is. And she would ask each student what their dream is. What is your dream? But ultimately, she said, the thing you need to learn and develop is the skill of listening. Listening. Can we really listen to each other and not go into each other saying, yeah, I got it. I got the answer. Truly listen and be patient in our listening and enter into relationship and make a difference. Make a difference. As we gather together today, I invite all of us to find ways in our lives that we can continue to listen, to not push back this world, this incredible world, but to invite us into engagement and relationship with those around us and throughout the world. And let us truly, like Jesus, go beyond ourselves, go beyond our comfort zones, beyond our institutional living, to really respond to the call of Jesus, to go out and touch people's lives and make a difference.